Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to our Need to Know podcast. We're back for episode 178, and I'm joined again by my co-host, Brenton the Boy Genius from Bendigo. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Robert. I'm ready to get on the Robert Crane train today and talk
The train of pain, I would assure you.
The Robert Crane train of pain.
So we've got a bit of a different episode. Rather than Brenton and I rambling on and filling up your time between half an hour and an hour, we have a special guest on. We have Doug Hazelman from CloudBerry, and it turns out that young Brenton over there is a CloudBerry devotee. Isn't that right?
I am. So I just use their file and folder backup product, but you know they have image-based backup products, etc., etc. Backs up straight into public cloud. So rather than relying on a vendor that could go out of business, could not go out of business, really quite a small vendor, you back something like an Amazon or a Microsoft or a Google Cloud, I think it integrates with, and you're like, well, if Microsoft go out of business, the world is ended. So I don't think they're going to shut Azure down anytime soon. So it's probably better to keep the data in there where you got the 99-year retention if you need it and all of that, rather than relying on a vendor that, a niche, really small vendor in the grand scheme of things.
So speaking about large companies being shut down, what's this I hear about Facebook being put to the torch?
Oh, yeah. So Facebook, for people not following the story, basically Facebook has a very open approach to privacy. It's more of an open door. They monetize, their business model is monetizing users and selling their information to advertisers, but they also have a history of using people for research, particularly without their consent. So the Cambridge University, a professor there, did some research with this app. The privacy back in those days, it's been fixed now, is basically grab as much data as you want about the person, but it also extended out to their friends. So you didn't necessarily consent. Your grandma might have got on there, or mother or whatever, jumped on there, filled out this funny quiz, and then your data was compromised. And that's why everyone's so upset. So there's 50 million records. There's now a site up there on Facebook. If you search for it, it'll tell you whether you are in the breach or not, which is kind of nice. And as a result, it's been an avalanche, absolute avalanche. Zuckerberg's just been up testifying. Did you see that, Robert?
He actually has a suit. That is the amazing thing, I think, out of all of this. He actually has a real suit, and you can tell that he's been coached by his minders and all that, but a pretty big, intense pressure cooker. And I think that I saw today that they've put all the testimony on YouTube. So if you've got 5 hours to kill, you can sit there and go through all the testimony for every day, so 5 hours a day, or do what I do, watch it at double speed and get over and done with in 2.5. So very interesting, and again, it sort of shows you that our world's changed in the fact that a lot of these companies now live in a world above most governments. So because they span such a the whole world effectively, it's very interesting seeing users and politicians trying to call them to heel, and I don't think it's going to put much of a dent in Facebook's growth. So the only thing I would say is, again, make sure that you are in control of your Facebook information and you do understand what's being done with it. And as they say, if you're getting something for free, then chances are you are the product.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And if you are up for a bit of a laugh, try and find those 10 minutes you know, highlight reels where they get the politicians asking really, really stupid questions because they don't understand technology. It's like, yeah, but are you going to have people opt into this data sharing in the future? And he's like, yeah, that's how the platform works. When you sign up, you opt in. And when you go into an app, you opt in. Like, that's how, yeah, yeah, but all right. It's quite hilarious, actually.
There was a couple of good questions, I must admit. The guy that asked him about trying to share his information about which hotel he stayed in, and that was a bit of that was a very interesting line of questioning, I thought. So yeah, that not all politicians are necessarily voted on their good looks. So anyway, we'll see what that turns out. And again, we not only have issues around Facebook, but especially in Europe, we've got Google. Microsoft obviously has some running with regulators as well. So we will continue to see this, no doubt, in the future. But let's just focus on what's good and happening in the Microsoft cloud world before we get into our interview with Doug. So from my side of the fence, basically you can now view your planner tasks in your Outlook calendar. So you basically subscribe to a feed of your planner tasks and they will end up in your Outlook. And you can also now invite external partners into your planner. So that means you can have people outside your Office 365 tenant come in and share the information that you have in planner. So I think that's pretty cool, and it's also going to make life much easier for a lot of people. We're also
just on that, Robert. Yep. I think it's important. I don't think Trello has that feature. So when we're talking about Trello and alternatives out in the marketplace, you know, when you're talking about a deep integration with the Office 365 stack, this is what all these updates seem to be doing. Here's stuff you can start to go to customers and say, you know, oh, Trello probably could do this, but it's too hard for them. Have a look what Microsoft's doing, and it's only getting better. So you can sell the future a little bit.
Yeah, I think also too, because it's built on the Azure AD and you've got conditional access, and exactly. Again, these services can take advantage of these other really powerful things like Azure AD and whatnot, Intune and so on. So again, this is the benefit. I mean, a lot of individual services may not be as fully featured as some other commercial products, but again, look at the bigger picture, look at the integrations that they have, and I think you'll find that Microsoft stuff generally wins out, especially for a business that is looking for these overall solutions to integrate email, files, folders, all that sort of stuff together. We're also getting a new Teams and Skype for Business Online Admin Center. So this hasn't appeared as yet. We'll put the article in the show notes so you can have a look. But as we know, Skype for Business is rolling into Teams, and that means that things like video chats and webinars and so on are also being rolled into Teams. How do you manage that? Again, we've had a very basic Skype for Business admin console for a while, but now that that sort of thing is rolling into Teams, how do we manage that? And Microsoft's solution will be a new admin center. And like I said, you can read the update there and get an idea of what's coming down the pipeline very shortly. And one of the other things that I noted here on the personal Office 365 accounts, not the business ones, the personal ones, they are adding an upgrade to the security. So basically, they're getting a lot of the features and functionalities that we see in Office 365. So the protection from things like crypto locker. So if your files get crypto lockered, you can roll them back up to 30 days. So a lot of these technologies we're beginning to see made available across the different platforms, because obviously they're based on very similar technologies in similar data centers from same provider. So again, it's good to see that, and we should see that the benefits of both products feed together to make them obviously better for each user set. So they were the three major things that I saw happening since our last podcast. What about you, Brenton? Anything else?
Yeah, well, just on that Office 365 personal accounts, a lot of people don't realize, but unless this has changed, Microsoft's always had a policy of rack separating, and usually if they can put it in a different data center, personal consumer data and business data. Business data doesn't really sit, it doesn't sit in the same rack as personal data. So I think it's good to see them grabbing that functionality that they've built for enterprise and making it available to people. But I did see a lot of people go kind of crazy on a lot of IT professionals out there that are well known and some not so well known, sharing that particular article, actually. People just went nuts over it. So you know, I think it's a good step in the right direction. And yeah, and as far as anything else going, I did a lecture today on innovation to Latrobe students. So I told them to stop being the same as everybody else and be different. And that took an hour and 20 minutes.
Damn, you're taking my business opportunities away. You're supposed to tell them to do the same thing they've always done to allow old men like me the opportunity to sell this new technology.
Well, that's right. Yeah, they're sort of the young and impressionable 20-somethings.
But the good thing is they have no attention span, so they'll forget it as many as you walk out the door, so...
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think I got a few key concepts, but when I was bringing up things like, here's Bill Cosby, and they didn't know who I was talking about, and then I showed them a picture of New Coke, and they go, oh, there's a New Coke. I'm like, no, that's from 30 years ago. And then I was talking about how Maccas used to make six Big Macs at a time rather than made for you, and they're looking at me strange. I'm like, oh, God, am I getting that old, Robert?
I think you are, unfortunately. What they say is when you turn 18, it's all downhill from there. So basically give up, get the wheelchair out and the walking cane and book your place in the retirement centre. Just make sure that you're near an electrical outlet and an internet connection. You should be fine.
All right, good to hear.
We also got some listener feedback. So this is from Jake. He sent us an email to let us know that he loves the show. Always like to hear that. And he'd like to hear some more around managing tenants from a CSP perspective. So he's a reseller that's selling products like Office 365 into his customers. And again, he's looking for tools to manage or monitor clients in bulk. Now, we'll given our interviews that we're running in the next couple of sessions, we certainly will put this on our to-do list and hopefully get to it very shortly. But the short answer is there aren't a huge amount of third-party tools as yet. A lot of the third-party providers have been very hesitant to get involved in the cloud, in my experience. Also, integrating, again, has been a bit of a challenge for them because a lot of their products are still very much based on-prem. But Microsoft does make the APIs available to all its, to basically just about all its services. So we should see these tools growing. But the short answer is most of the management will need to be done basically as a delegated admin. So you use your partner tenant and then jump across using the same credentials to a partner, to your customer's tenant to work on. But we should see some better tools coming down the pipeline as some of these providers get more familiar with the APIs Microsoft make available. But as yet, there's not basically a single go-to product that would do this. The best solution, I think, is to look at some sort of scripting. So PowerShell can allow you to access multiple tenants and do checks and those sort of things across it. So it is possible to do. At this stage, a bit of a manual, but we'll look at doing a deep dive and hopefully we can get some vendors to come on board and also give us their feedback about it, like I said, the interview that we've got coming up with Doug from Cloudberry. So again, great to hear from you. Thanks very much, Jake, for sending that along. We'll certainly make sure that we add it to our list of to-do topics and go a deep dive for you, do a bit of research on it, see who we can find to come and speak about the third-party option, maybe something around ConnectWise, if we can find people to come on board and speak to us. And we'll certainly put that on our to-do list for an upcoming episode. All right, there, Brenton, what else? Have we got anything else that you need to cover before we dive into our interview?
Yeah, Jake's already also asked, he said it'd be interesting to have a bit more on the positioning of the solutions with clients and some strategies around how to increase margin in those situations. So that's probably it. That's not something I can just address off the bat. Like, you know, same as what Robert's saying. There's heaps of strategies out there. You got to find out what works for you. I find when I talk to people, it's often the biggest challenge is the customer doesn't understand what you're selling them. And the more you can get the customer understand what they're buying, the more value they'll see. If you sell them security and they think there's no issue, then they're going to see it as a cost and worry about how much they're spending on it. If they're under attack by a hacker, you'll magically find almost infinite amounts of money to protect themselves all of a sudden.
Thank God for the government creating all this legislation for us that requires compliance. So again, the data breach legislation, the upcoming GDPR also additional reasons to reach out to your customer and understand whether they are protecting their data correctly and taking steps to ensure that they don't fall foul of this legislation. So again, I think as Brenton says, what we'll do is we'll put together some notes and we'll dedicate an episode or two or three or maybe by the look of it, and we'll go into a deep dive and all that, answer those questions. And again, while we sort of are talking about feedback, the best way for you to make sure that you can provide us feedback is you can use the email. So you can go feedback@needtoknow.cloud. That will reach us, just as Jake was able to do. Again, you can also follow me at DirectorCIA on Twitter. Any questions there? And yourself, Brenton, what's the best way they can get in contact with you?
They can find me on Bing, Brenton Johnson, or Google if they're that way inclined. And yeah, just search for me on brentonjohnson.com. All my social media's there. Just click on the one that you want to talk to me on, and I'm always listening.
Did you have to pay higher SEO to boost Brenton Johnson yourself up on Bing? Is that what happened?
No, it's basically SEO around individuals is if you can own the domain name, which is your actual name, and you can put something that's not completely terrible on your website, you pretty much win every SEO game there is. It's very, very heavily weighted for the domain name still, even now, because yeah, it just seems the most fair way of doing it according to Google's algorithm apparently, and obviously Bing's as well. So yeah, I think that's, if you don't own your own domain name and it's available, just go buy it.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm currently purchasing Brenton the Boy Genius from bendigo.com and .com.au to use that to drive some more listeners and some SEO to our little podcast here. But classic. I think with that, it's time for us to get into our interview with Doug Hazelman from Cloudberry. I'm joined by a special guest, Doug Hazelman. Doug, welcome.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah, I'm Doug Hazelman with Cloudberry. Cloudberry, cloudberrylab.com is our domain name, and we provide backup disaster recovery for computers as well as managed service providers.
Excellent. Well, I think that having the word cloud in the name seems to indicate that you handle some of these services that are in the cloud, like Office 365 and Azure. So why don't you give us a bit of an idea of those services, particularly around the Microsoft space? I mean, you know, what are they? What do they do? How do they work? That sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. The basic premise is from the backup standpoint, you always need to get your backup data offsite. And one of the best offsite locations is to utilize the cloud. So Cloudberry was kind of born with this idea of, how do we help companies and service providers manage this kind of cloud storage and manage getting the backups to the cloud. So with that being said, it's kind of a two-pronged approach. The first one is if you look at your on-prem infrastructure, your desktops, servers, you might have Exchange and SQL, those types of things on-prem, getting that data backed up and put into Azure. Azure storage is one of the popular options that we have. And then kind of from the other side is for companies that are utilizing Office 365, being able to provide a backup of that Office 365 data, whether it's the emails from Outlook Online, OneDrive, SharePoint, those types of things, and really providing kind of a cloud-to-cloud backup for that. So you can definitely use Azure if you want, or you could use another cloud service as well if you want to kind of protect your assets in case of a cloud issue, so to speak.
Yeah, when Godzilla tromps on a couple of data centers over there in the US. Do I bring my own Azure or do I use yours? What's the target? Can I say, look, I want to back up from Office 365 to my Azure tenant or to AWS or to somebody else? How does that work?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And it's bring your own cloud storage. We obviously support Azure, but we also support about 30 other different cloud platforms. It's really, we don't want to lock our customers into any one particular platform. Use the platform that's comfortable for you. And if you're comfortable with Azure, great. You've got your Azure storage. You create your storage spaces bucket, so to speak, and then configure your backups to write the data up to there. And then, you know, depending on the options that you select for like Windows servers and desktops, we have an image-based backup option where we can send the entire image up to Azure. And then in the event of maybe a failure on-prem, you can actually then spin that up as an Azure VM from that Azure storage. So that gives you kind of an additional DR option. In the event that you have a major issue on-prem, you can spin things up in Azure in the cloud and still be productive.
Okay. So talking about Azure, and I suppose AWS is the same, can I target, for example, cool storage for my backup? Is there sort of an access time that's required? Do I have to go to the hot tier always to do the backup, or could I push it into cold store or cool storage and archive storage in Azure?
You can push it to either one. The one thing that we haven't been able to implement yet on Azure is the automation of that tiering. So being able to move it from hot to cold, so to speak, that's something that we're working with Microsoft on to be able to provide support for in the future.
So I can go directly into cool storage if I want to?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. All right. That's very impressive. So when we're talking about, let's just focus on Office 365 for a second, and typically mailboxes, which is what I think most MSPs are looking for. How do I configure that? Is that just a security that I enable in my tenant to allow Cloudberry to come in and pull the data? How's the sort of the security handled when it comes to actually extracting my data and pushing it into a destination?
Yeah, so Office 365, you go in, it's done through our SaaS-based application called, which is our managed backup service. You go in and you connect it into your Office 365 account, you get the permissions. And then one of the things, and this is true across all the backups that we do, is even though it's a SaaS-based application, the data never actually travels through it. Once you get it configured, the data transfer happens then directly from, Office 365 to the cloud storage of your choice with encryption and all the options that you've chosen.
Okay, all right.
That's the same on the servers and client too. So if you're a managed service provider and you're configuring it for, for a customer, the data goes directly from the computer up to the cloud, does not pass through our managed backup service as, kind of an additional security feature.
Yeah, okay, so like the point-to-point connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so basically on the on-prem or the desktop side, I assume I need a client. We load a client on our Windows machine and we then target the destination. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it is. And it depends. So if you look at our website, you'll see that we have Cloudberry Backup for Windows and other operating systems. And then we also have our Managed Backup system. So Managed Backup is really geared towards managed service providers who are looking to provide a backup service for their customers. Looking at some of the deployment options, they can deploy the client software, via scripting. They can use an RMM tool if they're if they're familiar with that. They can use group policy to get the actual software deployed onto the server or the desktop. And then all configuration and management is done through the web-based portal, our managed backup service.
Okay. All right. So basically you have an offering which is direct to the customer. You also have an MSP style reseller program as well. And I would assume that the MSP side of things gives people, the MSP is obviously a single pane of glass for management and alerts and those sort of things.
Exactly. You log into the portal, or managed backup. You see all your customers, you see any kind of issues they're having, you can settle the configuration options, you can push down new options onto the clients if you want to. So it's kind of that complete control through that web-based portal for all your different customers.
And I assume, again, that Cloudberry will build the MSP. The MSP just rolls it into their services for their end users.
Exactly. And that's one of the other things too. You mentioned using different storage tiers and hot and cold, and we know there's different pricing on that. So what we really encourage our MSPs to do is talk with their customers, understand what their requirements are for backup. What's their recovery time, recovery point, and all those different types of things, because it may turn out that they need to have a copy of the backups locally as well as in the cloud. Just to to be able to recover faster or for other specific needs and those types of things. So that flexibility is kind of really what is key, is to give you that flexibility to tailor it to, you know, each customer, and then bill them based on what their options are. So, you know, if they have all these high requirements, then they're going to pay a bigger price. If they think their data is not important and they don't really care that much, then, you know, you can put them to the lowest tier cloud storage you want. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, essentially a higher profit margin for you, because you're probably not going to charge each customer the same thing, but it gives you that option.
Okay, so we've obviously got a cost for the CloudBerry service, and we've also got a cost for the storage location, which again is something that the MSP would arrange themselves and roll together and sell to a client. And again, that, as you mentioned, varies on the type of storage and all that sort of stuff. So that's something that the MSPs can work out using the Azure price calculator. But from your side of thing, what's sort of the rough cost we're looking at, and how's the product license? Is it per user, per tenant? How does that sort of work?
It depends. So for the on-prem backup, it's licensed per computer. So we have desktop and server licensing. And then for Office 365, it's then per user.
Okay. All right. In the Office 365 space, again, particularly, the license is for an unlimited amount of data. It's just a license per user and all their storage locations.
Yeah, it's licensed per O365 user.
Right. Okay. So again, we can take all that data from their OneDrive, from their Marboxes. What about the SharePoint side of it and the Teams? Is that also included in that licensing as well?
The SharePoint is Teams. I don't think we have support for yet.
Right. Okay. So I think one of the advantages that your product does provide is the ability to do item level recovery. So if a user accidentally, we will call it, deletes an email and then phones up and says they want that back from, from a backup or whatever, the MSP can obviously go into their portal, target that, and that item will be pushed back individually into that user's mailbox. So effectively, you can do item level recovery of emails, contacts, all that sort of stuff, files and folders. That's the case?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, so just a question. So a lot of MSPs I know tend to focus on the business SKUs, the business premium, because they, in my opinion, mistakenly are looking at the cheapest option for customers, and it makes sense to add the backup into there because emails and potentially deleted data aren't retained forever. But in the enterprise SKUs, particularly E3, which has things like legal hold, retention policies, e-discovery, admittedly, that is not backup, and we understand that. But what would you be telling people as to the value add that, you know, the CloudBerry backup gives them on top of these enterprise plans that do include these sort of retention features? What's the value add here, or what's the reason to look at backup as well as the retention that you do get in some of these enterprise plans?
The main thing, and this is something that I've heard other companies say, is it's your data, it's your customer's data, they own it. And while, yes, there are services provided by Microsoft and customers may require those services and definitely use them if it's required by the customer, nothing wrong with that. But if you have a customer that is, that wants to retain access to their data, in the event that something happens, maybe to Office 365, or there's, prolonged period of downtime or something like that, having it backed up maybe to another cloud platform gives them a little bit more peace of mind that, hey, Office 365 might be down, but I know my data is good, so when it comes back up, I'll be able to restore it in case there's a catastrophic failure. So, we hope that never happens, and I know Microsoft has designed it, so that it doesn't, but, I've lost emails, from Google, from Gmail before, several years ago. So
it's always best to be safe than sorry. And again, it makes exactly sense for that, small amount of additional cost. And also the difference, obviously, is the item level recovery, and the value add, I think, also is the MSP. So if you're an MSP and you're aggregating and you're managing numbers of tenants,
It's much easier to do it from a single pane of glass than I think to go into each individual tenant and try and pull things back. And it's not, again, it's more designed as retention, not as backup. Now, would it be possible to use your services as a migration tool? So could I, for example, take an on-prem Exchange server, back that up using your tool, and then again push that into Exchange Online if I wanted to?
No. we don't support recovery at that level from on-prem and into Office 365. Or so that would be like a migration. You could take an Exchange server and spin it up, you know, do an image level backup and then spin it up in Azure, but that's not Office 365.
Okay, so the on-prem solutions you've got for the backup, they back up the whole image of the server, including Exchange, or can I just target, say, just Exchange server and just SQL server and not when have the Windows server done in another way?
Yeah, you can. So if you go to our website, you'll see that we have different solutions, you know, different options. So on the on-prem, the client side, you can do file level if you want. You can do image level. You can also do application level for Exchange as well as SQL.
Okay. All right. And at the moment, obviously, as Microsoft 365 and Azure and these other cloud services become more and more popular, we're seeing a growth in the number of providers like yourself that are in the space or entering the space. So there's now, you know, quite a few. What would you say is your differentiation point versus some of the other solutions that are out there? What makes you different from other providers that are in market?
Yeah, a lot of the providers that are in market, some require you to buy their hardware, which then syncs the data to their cloud. So that's kind of that's vendor lock-in, you know, kind of immediately. Others have software-based solutions, but they still own their cloud, and you have to write it to their cloud. So I think one of the things that, you know, that really differentiates us is cloud choice. Because we support so many different cloud platforms, it really allows our service providers and our customers to tailor a solution that best meets their needs and their budget. Because we all know that, you know, pricing is different depending on what it is that that you're looking for, what you want. So, you know, it's really that I talk about as flexibility, and ease of use. And from a price point, you know, if you do some comparisons, you know, our pricing, we're very aggressive on our pricing. We have a number of, with thousands of MSPs, that use our solution that aren't necessarily the biggest MSPs. Right, that are a little bit more price conscious and those types of things. So I think you take all those things into consideration. That's really what sets us apart.
Okay, so obviously now we live in a cloud world, which is a worldwide market. There's no restriction, obviously, to MSPs from anywhere in the world signing up, hopefully, to your product. But the question I've got, particularly for us down here in Australia, is it direct to you, or do you have you know, distributors down here, or in regions around the world, or is it a direct relationship with CloudBerry?
It's at this time, it's a direct relationship with CloudBerry.
Okay, all right. And
it's, again, super easy sign up. So
yeah, oh yeah, definitely. No. Just I mean, obviously, some of the other providers that are out there, they go through a disti, or, you know, they go directly to MSPs or whatever. So they have a slightly different model. I think that, you know, as you mentioned, just the direct sign up is the way to go. The only issue I would potentially see is some of the MSPs who aren't in the US, obviously playing in US dollars, and we do get you know, currency fluctuations, and that can be a challenge sometime to budget. But I do notice in your pricing here that you would seem to have the ability to go month by month and up to a total of a year. So could I prepay for a year and sort of lock in that rate?
Yeah, that's our most preferred option is to do the yearly billing. We show the monthly price there, you know, in term, you know, on the Office 365 product, you know, just to go month to month. But we really do prefer, you know, if you pay for the year, you get a better discount. Also, we have very aggressive volume discounts. So, you know, the more users, the more endpoints, more servers that you add, you know, the lower the price goes individually. And you can, You can pre-buy licenses. So if you know that you're going to end up using 500 licenses in a year of any given product, you can pre-buy those. And then as you deploy them to the customers, and they just automatically tick down from your license count. And you can purchase additional licenses right from within the managed backup portal.
Cool. Oh, that makes it nice and easy. And what about support? So if I need support, if I have some issues, or you know, the client's not installing or something's not working, you know, how do we go about support with CloudBerry?
Well, we've got right within the product. If you're having an issue, you can click on support. It'll automatically send us the logs. You can initiate it that way. You know, if you go to our website, you'll see our different support options. We are manned essentially 24/7. So for most regions around the world, it's not an issue to make sure that our support is there in case our customers need it.
Cool. All right. So again, I noticed on your website that you do again offer a free trial. So I assume that's what you'd be recommending people to go and basically get and plug in and have a look and see what it does and get a better idea of, you know, what your products are, how they work, and you know how they're configured.
Yeah. So you know, if you're an individual or a small business and you only have maybe three or four, computers that you're worried about backing up, then you probably don't need our managed backup service. You can download a free trial. You get 15 days of the client software. If you're an MSP and you're interested in checking out, what we have to offer, in terms of that, multi-tenancy and the SaaS-based application, you register. We'll get you set up with an account. You get another trial period. We also have worked out a deal with another cloud vendor to give you a couple of gigs worth of space in the cloud just to test things out.
Cool. All right. So again, we'll put all the details and the contact notes in for this podcast so people can refer to that. We'll also get Doug's details at the end of the session if you want to contact him directly. But as we're sort of finishing off, I think that what we're seeing in the cloud space and in IT in general is just the explosion of data. There's just more and more data created every day than every previous day before it. So this data volume is just growing at, volumes and volumes and volumes. Even in the small end of town, we're talking, terabytes to petabytes, and we need to back it up. So we've got twice the information that we need to manage and keep on top of and make sure that it's secure and it suits GDPR and all this sort of stuff. I mean, in your view, where are we sort of going with this, this data volume is moved to the cloud with a lot of information? Is that just going to continue, and is the volumes of data just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and meaning that people like Microsoft and AWS are just going to keep having to add bigger and bigger disks? Is that the way that we're headed?
It's being in the industry for a long time, you do see this data explosion. But I think what I've noticed, and I know others have noticed it too over the last several years, is the data is moving, meaning the data is not necessarily on-prem anymore, right? You've got your CRM hosted in the cloud. You've got your support applications, hosted in the cloud. You're using cloud-based applications, and the data actually lives in the cloud instead of necessarily on-prem. Now, if you're, creating individual works, then, you are probably creating it on-prem, but you still might be storing it in the cloud. You might be using Dropbox or OneDrive or something like that to sync it and store that data up there. But I don't think the amount of data is going to change. I mean, it's going to go get any less. I think, that's continued to be exponential. But I do think where that data lives is what's changing, and it's changing pretty rapidly.
Yeah, I think that, again, one of the things we sort of don't, take into consideration or appreciate is just the sheer amount of volume of data that's being created, even individuals. Just look at photos, the amount of photos my parents take when they go on holidays. They come back with gigs and gigs of photos. That's all got to be backed up and stored somewhere. They probably never look at it again, but it's got to go somewhere. All these people running around with phones taking pictures all the time, again, that's got to live somewhere. So, again, it's getting to that point where there's just, again, like I said, so much data on our devices, and it ends up in the cloud, and then backing it up and being able to retrieve it, it certainly does you know, indicate the challenges that are there. And it's important, obviously, as we become more and more dependent on this data, that it is backed up, especially for businesses, and it can be recovered. And obviously, mm-hmm. that's what your, you know, the aim of the product. And I think there's a strong requirement for that, you know, out in the business world, and the ability for the MSP to target, look, I want this to go to Azure, or I want it to go to AWS, to be, you know, separate from what we have in Microsoft, or we've still got the on-prem. So you've certainly got that full range of options available to people. So the last question I've got for you before we round off our little conversation here is, in the technology space, you know, we're seeing much more rapid change. We're seeing, you know, the growth of new industries. In your experience, what's sort of exciting you? Where do you think that we're headed? You know, what would you be telling an MSP that they need to, you know, be focused on is moving away from just pure email? Where do you see the opportunities for, you know, MSPs to really, you know, take a hold of this new world of the cloud and what's coming down the pipeline? What would your recommendations be to someone?
Well, so I think, especially from the MSP standpoint, is you have to be the trusted advisor, but you have to know these technologies, you have to know these cloud technologies, and you have to know these cloud-based applications. It's no longer a matter of, you know, I can come in and manage your Exchange server or SQL server for you, you know, because now the application itself lives in the cloud. They have to be able to understand and know how their customer requirements are changing and how they're using these different cloud-based applications and how they can help them to manage that. And you know, even with Office 365 and GApps and all those types of things, you know, I think it's extremely important, because I think we're, you know, the days of, you know, just being able to do break fix, you know, for a number of customers, is definitely, you know, kind of going away as everything is moving, you know, to the cloud. If they can't help their customers manage it, wrangle it, get an understanding of where their data is and where it lives, you know, then they're going to be a disadvantage, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the challenge is the underlying methodology and technologies are very similar to the way they've always been. Probably the destinations now are different, so we don't have the same sort of control on-prem, but we get far more resources in the cloud. We get options. We can send the data to AWS, to Azure, to Office 365, where on-prem typically it was to a local hard disk. So this does introduce some complexity, as you say, but it also, again, gives the flexibility. And I think, like you say, the people that are successful, the ones who are going to be able to manage that and understand, okay, this makes sense here. This is the best way to, you know, get the value here, and this is the best option for this client. So, again, yeah. Some challenges there, but plenty of opportunities.
The challenge goes to line of business applications, right? Where, you know, the department or the business is making the decision and leaving IT out of it completely, where they, you know, they have no control. So that's, you know, from an MSP perspective, how do they help their customers manage, you know, and understand where all that is? Because that's where a lot of decisions are being made now.
Yeah, and again, you've got this underlying regulatory environment that's now being legislated over the top of us, so GDPR. We've got Australian data laws as well now, and that adds that complexity because, again, the customer's not the IT expert, but it needs to make sure that its data is secure, and it's going to rely on its trusted provider to say, look, you know, this is the best reason it's using military-grade encryption. As you say, it's not passing through a third party. You know, this is the sort of guarantees, or this is the sort of options that we're going to need to provide our customer, and that, as you mentioned, requires understanding the product and making sure that it fits exactly the customer's needs.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that we've covered a lot of information there, and hopefully people have got value from what Doug's been able to share with us. What's the best way for people to take advantage of what you've talked about, Doug, or get in contact with you or follow up about your product and obviously either get a trial or talk to you about becoming an MSP reseller?
Yeah, so the best place to start is cloudberrylab.com. So it's L-A-B at the end of Cloudberry. That's our website. You know, you can go and register to you know, start the MSP trial. You can download trial versions of our client-based software, those types of things. You can contact sales through there. So that really kind of kicks off the process. If you want to contact for me, I'm on Twitter at VMDoug. So VMDoug on Twitter, and Doug H doug.h@cloudbearlab.com on email. I'll send you all that information. You can share that.
Yeah, I'll make sure that we get all that information up in the show notes so people can contact Doug or go in and have a look at CloudBerry. I think that, again, there are a number of providers in this market and it's worthwhile doing some investigation to find out what works best. But certainly from what I see on the website and the discussions we've had, that you've got the flexibility there to also do on-prem, which most MSPs and their clients still are to some extent. It's very rare that the MSP has clients that are totally cloud-based now. I think it's also good that you've got the ability to go to the Microsoft world, to go to Azure, to do that as well. So you've got that flexibility without having to go to different products. So again, that would, again, suit a lot of needs to have that flexibility. So I think there's a lot there to commend it. We'll make sure that the information is in the show notes so people can refer to it. Obviously, they can contact you if they have any other questions. So to round it all up, in summary, do you want to just give us a bit of a overview of what we've talked about quickly? And again, just a quick elevator pitch on, you know, why CloudBerry is the best backup solution.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, CloudBerry, especially for managed service providers, gives you a lot of freedom of choice. You can back up from on-prem to the cloud. You can back up Office 365 to, you know, another cloud provider, so it's cloud to cloud. But that flexibility and a lot of different options to help you grow your business and maintain some profitability.
Excellent. All right. We always like that profitability. That's the only way that we stay in business these days. And anybody that helps us do that certainly is worthwhile our consideration. So again, I'll thank Doug very much for his time. I know that he's obviously based over there on the other side of the world, where it's probably getting dark here or it's just getting light on the other side. But thanks to the wonders of technology, we're able to communicate and record and make this available to everybody out there who is listening on the podcast. We appreciate that. And again, I thank Doug for his time with our chat today.
Thank you, Robert.
No problems. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.